What's up, everyone? Jesse here with episode 5 of the Lucky Dog Podcast. I'm joined with a good friend of mine and someone I think we've all been waiting to hear, Tommy Joe Martins. Thanks for coming on in our makeshift studio.
Hey, I like it. We're sitting outside. We got a nice patio view here.
We're enjoying the Mooresville in its finest, Mooresville area.
Lovely day to sit outside and have a chat about some racing.
Yeah, in Race City of all places, right? I appreciate you, man. It's cool. This is our final episode of the first season, and I think we got a lot to talk about. I think it's fun. I love when you were able to confirm with this, kind of sitting down and thinking of questions to ask, and like I found myself 2 pages in just thinking of all of our conversations. So I really appreciate it, man, and we'll get this thing going with our first question we ask a lot of these guys is, you know, being that this is a Lucky Dog Podcast, when and how do you kind of prepare your mindset going into a race each weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think every race is different, right? I mean, obviously, we're going to, not to put a time stamp on this, but like we're going to Daytona this weekend, right? Yeah. I'm going to approach that very different than we approach a place like Michigan, where we just came from. But it's interesting, man. I've been on teams where, and you have too, where you don't even have the full complement of tires.
Yeah.
And that actually, in a way, is kind of freeing.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people don't understand. And, yeah, you get frustrated as a driver. You're like, God, I don't even have the tires. If I just had the tires, I could be up there running better. And you get mad. But at the same time, you know, like, I would always yell at guys that on the team you're driving now was like, you know what, guys? We only have one pit crew for 2 cars. We don't have all the tires. Why aren't we the most aggressive people on strategy on pit road?
Like, every weekend.
we don't have anything to lose.
Yeah.
And so, in a way, you can be – In a position like that, when you're on a smaller team, you can kind of be the one to take the wild card shot. Sure, let's take the wave around here, even though we're on 40 lap tires. Who cares? Because if we play this straight up, we're never going to beat those guys at the front of the
field.
Correct.
And it's almost like a sense of pressure being lifted off of it when it's a scenario where you're like, just like you said, we don't have all the tires.
Yeah, we don't have anything to lose.
Why should we expect to be 10th when, you know, we're spending 1/10 of what they are this race, you know? And it's like, it's almost a sense of, okay, like you said, it frees up so many creative options to, you know, go out there and do something different.
Right. And the teams that it really targets, honestly, are people like me now, because we have a pretty fast car. And I think about just this weekend at Michigan, we were running right around 10th or 11th on the long run. But because of when the caution came out, and because of the strategy options that it wound up, you know, playing out, well, Matt Mills, your teammate over there at BJ McLeod Motorsports, winds up getting the lucky dog on one of those restarts, and now he beats me by 5 spots. And it's like, man, I was half a track in front of him, but because of the way that played out.
You know what his strategy was? They didn't take any tires.
Exactly. Just come in and take a splash and go. Whereas for me, I was like, okay, we're running pretty good. Let's just be conservative.
Let's do what they do.
Let's just take 4 tires. Well, again, that doesn't wind up playing out for me. It plays out for Matt. And you get frustrated with that. But really, we're probably the teams that, when I look at sort of the back part of the field now, the teams that wind up being the biggest targets for the strategy stuff is me.
Yeah.
being kind of in that upper middle part.
Kind of the 16th to 22nd.
Right.
You know?
We wind up being the targets for a lot of this because we're going to probably play it fairly straight up.
Yeah.
But it gives you guys the creative freedom to just go for it.
Yeah.
So like we were at a place like New Hampshire. It was running okay. I wound up getting a little bit of a wreck with the 47 car, but we're still hanging in there. We're right around the first car, a couple cars on the lead lap, or one lap down, excuse me. Well, now we have a caution. And what do I see? Everybody's taking the wave around. And I go, man, we're pitting.
Yeah.
So now I got to have a shootout for the lucky dog and hope that we catch a caution. But at the same time, if we catch a caution, it just gave all those guys a lap back.
A lap back, and they still have a set of tires.
Yeah. So I don't really want that either. So it puts me in a weird spot where it's like, well, I got to race my guts out. But if we had taken the wave around, you're still at a disadvantage where you're like, well, man, I hope we catch a quick caution here. So you're kind of in a spot where you have a lot to lose, whereas if you're at the back of that group, you really have nothing to lose.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the weird spot I find myself in now, Jesse, being in a spot where we're in a pretty competitive car, but it's not a top flight car. It's in that next little group. And I feel like we get stuck in these positions so many times this year. Like I could probably count 4 or 5 times where it gets down to the last 30 laps of a race And I feel like we wind up finishing worse than we should have because of stuff exactly like we're talking about, where you're like, yeah, well, I don't really know how we were supposed to play that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's funny, and I think it brings up a good kind of segue to what I'd like to get your thoughts on, and that's just the progression you've had the last 4 or 5 years. You know, like, I'm sure 3 years ago you and I'd be having a different conversation about, yeah, these strategies, they always work out for us. And now you guys have elevated your stuff so much, it's good for someone like me, and it's kind of hurting someone like you. But I think that's neat to see, you know, it's paying off, and it's, you know, paying off to the level of, you know, now you're past that kind of level of maybe gaining spots on strategy, and now you're doing it solely with the competitive work that you guys have put in. So, you know, I remember when we were truck racing together part-time in 2016.
Yeah.
You know, and that, it seems like forever ago. It was 5 years ago, which you know, in the racing world can either be an eternity or not that long. So kind of walk everyone through, and me as well, how hard it's been to go from running, I think you guys ran like 12, 14 races in 2016, to full-time competitive, right there at the playoff and the Xfinity level.
Yeah, and it's taken so many partners and good people, really, is what this is. And you know, we were talking before we went on the podcast about just how tough it is to get good people. I've had a lot of great people work for me, but were they the skill level that they would, like, change the trajectory of my career?
Yeah. Or the team.
Probably not, right?
Yeah. Like, they elevate the people around them.
Right. It's not that they're not working hard. They're working really hard. Like, I've had so many people that have worked so hard for me. Like, I think about a guy like Kevin Eagle, who's now kind of on the fabrication side and still hanging out here in Mooresville. He worked for Nice there for a few years and stayed in trucks. He was my crew chief back in 2016. We were doing that deal.
Yep.
Man, you're talking about a guy that literally was driving the dually to the racetrack and then being the crew chief.
And then crew chief.
We didn't have a setup plate. We didn't even have pull down. We didn't have anything. Yeah. And it's like, you're kind of putting the guy in a position where he can't really succeed, right? And I look at that from a management standpoint, what we were doing in the truck series, and go, did we really give ourselves a fair shot when we show up and we go, man, we ought to run top 15?
Correct.
Well, no, the hell we shouldn't with what we're doing.
With what we got.
Yeah, we really shouldn't. And that's not a reflection of the people and their effort level. It's really a reflection of your budget and the decisions that you're making from management. And we've learned that slowly over time, Jesse, where it's like, now over the last couple of years, we started off Martins Motorsports and Xfinity again last year. We struggled, man. I mean, good grief. We were down there in the 30s in the standings the first part of the year.
Yeah.
And you were running for JD at the time. You guys started off pretty hot at the beginning of the year. And we were like, good grief. We're getting our butts kicked out here. And we felt like we had a pretty good plan, but really when we reevaluated it, we went, man, we probably didn't. Like, we had one guy that was our crew chief, Danny Johnson, who's now the crew chief, I believe, over there on the 07 car, or he's the car chief over there now. And he does a great job. It's not about him. It's like, did we surround him with the right people to succeed? There's a lot of guys in this thing that can be mechanics.
Yeah. Tinker, work, turn wrenches.
Sure.
Yep.
But how many people can lead the team and really change the trajectory of a team? And we felt like we were just going to go in overkill. So we found ourselves probably, it was after Indianapolis, we had an axle come flying out down the front stretch at Indianapolis last year. And we were down out of the bonus money, out of the top 30. And we looked at it and went, we have got to change something. Yeah. We have gone halfway through this season, and we're not even close to meeting any of our goals. And actually, we're now putting ourselves in jeopardy of going out of business.
Yeah.
We can't be out of this point situation for too long. And it led us to go and get Frank Kerr, who's now working over at VJ McLeod in the Cup Series. And we also got Buddy Sisco, who at the time was working for Venturini, but he left. He had worked for Brad Keselowski Racing, where I know you got some of your trucks in that truck deal. And Buddy is incredible and is still with us now. Super knowledgeable. And so we said, okay, we're not just going to have one crew chief level guy. We're going to have three. Yeah. We're just going over the top with this. We're not just going to get some help. We're going to get the best help we can possibly find.
Yeah.
And if this doesn't fix it, then we don't know what else to do. And what do you know? It fixed it.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, Tommy Joe looks a whole lot better as a driver when now you've got basically three cup-level crew chief type people working on your stuff.
In the shop, yeah.
In the shop. Boy, how quickly that changed. Yeah. And, you know, Danny wound up going on to another team. He wound up over there at Auer Motorsports there at the end of the year. and Frank and Buddy kind of traded out the crew chief duties for us over the course of the year. And you look at where we wound up in the standings, we wound up like 21st or 22nd. That was a huge difference.
And on top of what the momentum it gives you going into the offseason.
Absolutely. And so now our young guys on the team were better having been around two elite 100%. Level guys. Yep. And then we wound up, Frank goes over to BJ's, we keep Buddy, we wound up getting Dan Stillman over there now this year. And we brought in another mechanic, and we feel like we basically stayed ahead of the game. So why am I telling you all this? Why are we telling this whole story? We learned through a process of really hard knocks that this is really about an idea that you set in as management. Yeah. That you go, okay.
A culture.
I can try to save money. And we tried to save money for a really long time. I mean, every penny. And trust me, I still do. I literally get mad about spending money on flights. Like I was booking that earlier today. But where you can't get cheap is on people.
Yeah.
You just can't do it. And we feel like you got to have a couple of crew chief level people on a race car if you're going to have any level of success. Yeah. And I feel like that's played out this year. We've stayed really up in the top 20 in the points basically the entire year. Here lately, we've had some top 15, top 10 level runs. Maybe they didn't finish that way, but definitely been up there and been really competitive. And that's really a credit to the guys' hard work in the shop, but also a real change in the philosophy that my dad and Rodney Reeson and myself have had over the course of the last really year, middle of last year to middle of this year.
Yeah, it's so, I think, you know, that story is just the exclamation point on how important it is to keep the chemistry and the camaraderie within a small team like us and working at the level it should, you know, because I think the big teams, and obviously not speaking for them, but it's a lot easier for them to take out a piece and put a piece back in. And it's very, you know, machine-like, and it operates on its own, and they have their engineers and their, you know, their competition directors. And for us, it's like, you know, it's hard to paint a picture, but it's everyone together working as one. And if you can bump that up, you know, one, if you can bump everyone up one notch, that elevates the team 10 times. And I think you're a great example of that, right? Like, you know, post Indy last year, look at what it's done in 12 months. And, you know, speaking for myself and people in the industry, you know, you guys literally went, you went plus 10 on the points chart, you know?
Right.
And it's so easy to overlook at the same time being, and I can kind of talk a little, or I feel where you're coming from a little from our truck, from my truck days as a small team. But when, you know, you have guys that know we don't have all of the resources that they do, but yet you still want me to work like we can beat them. It's so important to keep the morale the right level, so that they're still willing to work their tails off and their butts off and stay till 11 o'clock, you know, before Vegas or something like that.
Yeah, and we ran into that really this year. So I sit here and act like, oh, man, we figured it out.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, as early as January, we really hadn't figured it out still. Yeah. So Frank Kerr left Martins Motorsports, went over to BJ's team to run in the Cup Series, which we understood. And I couldn't pay him Cup money. At our team, and he understood that too. So this was no like hard feelings or anything.
Yeah, yep.
But that was a major piece to lose. I mean, Frank is an incredible mechanic and crew chief and leader. And so now Buddy, as an older guy and as a guy that admittedly is like, all right, you know what? I'm probably only going to work in this stuff for a few more years. I said, man, are you cool being the crew chief this year? That's a lot on you. And Buddy said, yeah, absolutely. I'm going to do it. Great. We go to Daytona. We go to Daytona Road Course. He gets back from the Daytona Road Course. We'd had a little bit of a tough run, and he basically just comes in Monday morning and goes, look, man, I can't do this. I can't be on the road this much. I know physically I can't put this much into it. It's going to wear me down. I'm already wearing down. We're 2 weeks into it.
Yeah.
You got to get somebody else. So we wound up finding Dan Stillman, and really what that tells me is we had a bad plan going into it again.
Yeah.
So I've realized now as an owner and as a manager here, I got to have two guys that can call the shots in this stuff, because if I don't, I'm going to wind up over a barrel at some point.
Almost at any given moment or point, you
let's,
have to have two.
Let's say that I got a guy suspended, right? Let's say it's something silly, right? Yeah. Let's say something falls off a car, piece of lead, right?
Yeah.
Not anybody's direct fault. They're certainly not the crew chief's fault. Probably they're not the ones that secured the lead in the car, but now they're suspended for a race. Well, who am I getting?
Yeah.
Would I have to go outside my organization?
Yeah.
Like, how am I going to handle that? Yeah, whereas now I can do it inside the organization, somebody that's really familiar with our cars, strategy, how we've been running, myself, my setups, the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a good point, is familiar with you and you're on in what takes place on track.
Continuity.
Yeah. And that's a great point too, because it's so, you know, everything that happens on track for guys like us, it's so important, because, you know, we don't have 25 cars, we don't have 20 cars, we don't have 10.
Right.
And so it's like, you know, the notebook of a team like us or a team like yourself, you know, it is vital to next week's success. And like you said, if you don't have that one guy, then what's the next guy supposed to do with? You know, it's a blank slate.
And so, we put ourselves in positions where we're asking too much out of people. And I think that's the thing that I look at, Jesse, now as a manager. I go, am I asking too much out of any individual person on our team? All the way down to the truck driver, to the crew chief, to the guy that's the underneath mechanic. Yeah. Like, am I asking too much out of them for what I'm paying them? And what kind of time commitment am I getting out of it? So if I was sitting here going, all right, guys, here's how this is going to work. I want anybody listening to this podcast to think about this. If I told you, okay, man, here's your job. You're going to get paid $800 a week. I think a lot of people right off the bat is like, all right, that's probably on the low end of what I'm willing to accept as a professional salary.
Yeah, keep going.
Okay. So now I need you to show up at 7:00 in the morning, and I need you to work till really, I don't know when. Yeah. Let's say 11, 12:00 at night sometimes. And then I need you to show back up the next day. Yeah. And by the way, you're going to leave out on a Thursday every week, because we're not going to fly you to most of these events.
Yeah.
We're going to have you guys drive in a van or something.
Yeah.
Right? Just like the van that's pulling off here next to us. But yeah, you're going to have you drive in a van. So that's going to be a 12-hour drive. You're going to ride in a van because we can't afford the plane tickets. And then you're going to get to the track. You're going to work all day. You're going to get there at 6:00 in the morning. You're going to leave when the garage closes at 12:00 at night. And then we're going to run the race. Honestly, you're probably going to run like 25th, and then you're going to come back on a Sunday.
Yeah, because you'll get Sunday at midnight.
You're going to get home Sunday at 8:00, 9:00 at night, and then I need you back in here Monday morning at 7:00. And by the way, I'm paying you $800.
Yeah.
If you're looking at that and going, well, that's a good investment of time, who the hell is going to work for you? It's just really tough. And so we were talking about like finding help. The way we looked at it from our standpoint was, okay, I got to be realistic with what I expect all these people working for me are going to do. So if it's actually me hiring, right now we have 5 guys full-time in our shop, including 4 of them that go on the road.
Yeah.
All right, Buddy stays back. But I looked at that and went, all right, if hiring a 5th mechanic, because that was really what we were kind of debating.
Bouncing back and forth.
Are we going to do this? I said, if hiring a 5th mechanic actually gets us a week ahead, let's just say it puts us 1 week ahead, where now the guys get to leave at 4 or 5 o'clock every day. Or in the case of the last few weeks, we've actually had weeks where we've been so far ahead, they get a couple days off during the week.
Yeah, they come in late on Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden, well, is that a better environment for everybody to work in? And is it going to be a more productive environment? Where you and I have been a part of race teams, man. And the thing is, you're doing what you can do, right? I'm not ripping into anybody, but it's unrealistic to think the guys that have been working 14, 15 hours in a day, when they start getting that 13th, 14th, 15th hour, are going to be just as accurate, are going to be just as productive, are going to be just as secure with every bolt on the race car that it takes to be good as they were when they first showed up. So that's what leads to a lot of this. Using the equipment a whole lot and asking so much out of your people. And it puts people like us, right, that work to get the sponsorship, work to put all this together, in a tough spot where you're like, well, this is what my sponsorship can afford. But at the same time, we know that there's going to be a lot of variance. There's going to be a lot of hits and a lot of misses over the course of a season. And it's frustrating because, like, you want that success for those guys so bad. Like, I've been in that room.
Yeah.
You know, I've been over there at BJ's shop for 3 years. And you're like, man, you guys are working your ass off. You're here every night. But is it completely productive?
Yeah.
Or are you just wearing everybody down? And like now that I've kind of been on the other side of this, dude, I'm like, man, I've been a part of deals that we have put together in the truck series, that we've put together in the Xfinity series, where I just look at that and go, man, if this failed, it wasn't on my people. It was on me because I'm the one that put them in that situation.
Yep. Yep. Talk about adjusting the expectations for you guys, because I think that's an important thing for us racing, you know, and it's always sounds funny to maybe an average fan, but you know, we know we're not going to go out there and win.
Right.
We know we're not going to go out there and lead laps, except maybe at super speedways or under caution. So it's like, you know, it's a different mindset that I feel like drivers like us have, and especially someone like you have as an owner who's responsible for, you know, five guys, like you said. Talk about the expectations. And, you know, I'm curious, do you have a discussion with your guys? Have they, you know, obviously they've had the experience where they kind of know themselves, but has there ever been any like variance of, you know, you guys start running so well and then all of a sudden they're like, shit, we finished 20th this week. What happened? You know?
Yeah. And we've had that happen a lot this year, yeah. Where like perfect example at Michigan, everybody was pissed off. We finished 19th.
Yeah. And you're like, whoa, 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 guys.
Oh no. For me, I was furious.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, like, let's think about this here, Jesse. It's like, I really haven't had many opportunities in my life to get top tens.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, that wasn't the goal over at BJ's. That wasn't the goal over at Carl's.
Yeah.
It was to maybe get a top 20.
Mm-hmm.
That was the goal. Well, now I'm in a car where really my goal is probably to get a top 15, but a top 10 is it's out there. It's just probably on the edges.
It's like those five or six races where it kind of feels like, hey, this is our chance, guys.
And Michigan was one of those where we had a big crash.
Yep.
Four of the contenders got knocked out.
Yeah.
We were having a great day.
We
were ahead of the 51. We're ahead of the 39. We're ahead of some guys that we normally race with. So we're beating them. We're racing with Brett Moffitt for ninth, basically, and you go, okay, this is setting up for us. Well, when you finish 19th, you know what? If I told myself at the beginning of the year, hey, look, you're going to get 25 top 20s or whatever, I said, oh, man, great year. But in the moment when you feel like, man, we had a shot at a top 10, of course you're going to come up really disappointed. And we've had to have those conversations in a competition meeting where I had to ask everybody on my team, okay, we're doing pretty good. I feel like the expectations for us have changed. We went into the year, I knew it was going to be super competitive, dude. Like,
dude,
the creation
I'm blown
of the
away.
The 48 team, super competitive. They just finished ninth. Mike Harmon's team finished stinking like eighth at Phoenix.
And then the extra teams of the big guys.
Exactly.
You know, the 54, the 16. Like,
yeah, the 31 showing
31.
Up and now running great.
Yeah.
You know, the way that we knew that they were going to be all year.
The 26.
26 car being great. So there are so many teams in that pocket of cars there from that, like, our motorsports running another car.
Yeah.
That 15 to 25 that's super deep.
Yeah.
And so we looked at this going into the year, and I told my guys, like, you know, man, it's going to be probably tougher this year to run in the same place we were running last year. I said, it's going to be really hard for us to finish in the top 20 in points. If we do that, we're basically going to have to beat everybody that we're racing with.
Yeah.
Guys like Josh Williams, guys like Alex LeBay.
Yeah.
Landon Castle running full-time
Landon,
in the four
Johnny's
car.
Johnny's cars, BJ's cars.
We knew this. We said, going into the year, man, we're basically going to have to beat everybody just to finish in the same spot that we did last year. So we had to have a little bit of a reckoning, Jesse, where we came in, I forget even where it was. It was in the first few months of the year, and everybody's like, was mad after Atlanta. I think we finished 17th, and everybody was pissed off back at the shop, furious, because I fell back a couple spots right there at the end of the race. We got a little bit free, whatever. Doesn't matter. And I had to basically have an attitude adjustment with everybody on the team. This has come from me. Because I got out of the car and went, yeah, that's disappointing. We probably had a shot at a top 15 there. But everybody was like, yeah, we ought to be running the top 15 every week. And I went, let's take a time out.
Yeah.
I said, where do you think we stack up? And I asked everybody in the team, I said, where do you think we actually should be running? From a budget standpoint, from cars,
it's
where do you
so
think we are?
It's so important to have that conversation.
And they went, top 15. We should be top 15 all the time. And I was like, no, absolutely not. First of all, there's 14 cup affiliated teams
that could win a race every weekend.
14 every week. There's four Gibbs, three Colic cars, an RCR car. There's four junior cars.
Yeah. Penske car.
Penske car. And I know there's another one that I'm forgetting. But basically, we added it up. It's 14 teams. Then you have Sieg. Then you have Clements. Then you have Brandon Brown. Then you have 2 Hour Motorsports cars.
Yeah.
Then you have Sam Hunt's deal, which is really tied into Toyota.
Yep.
Then you have the 48, which is really tied into RCR. So we started, I walked it back.
And the top 20 is now great.
And I was like, hey guys, by the way, if we're running 19th, that's actually badass.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just so we put this in perspective.
Look at
the depth of the field we're dealing with here. So really, if I had to be like handing out awards at the end of the year for who I think is doing the best, I think Jeremy Clements is the person leading the group right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely.
For what he does with a family team, they do a lot of their own motors. They go out and spend the money competition-wise, and they spend it on a great pit crew.
Yeah.
They spend it on getting the tires every week. Yeah. They invest in their cars. They try to refresh them every year and get like one more good car. They spend a lot of smart money. They do a lot of the work themselves, which keeps the money in the building, right? They're not paying extra mechanics and stuff.
They're not outsourcing much.
No, Jeremy's in there working on the cars. They drive in a toter home. So they save all the money they can, and they run well enough that their program makes a lot of sense. They can provide a lot of great value to sponsors. That's what I want Martins Motorsports to be.
Yeah, that's the goal.
But I'm looking at it and going, look, man, I'm at a disadvantage. Like, you worked on your own stuff. You've been there. I don't do that. Like, I can admit that on a podcast in front of the world. I am not the mechanic that you're going to see under the hood. Oh, man, old school guy under the hood. That's not what I do. Like, I've been more of a manager, more of a business guy, more of a marketing guy. That's what I went to school for.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I still provide value in motorsports. There's plenty of people that have that job on a big race team.
Correct.
But for me, that's what I do for our team. I'm that guy. Yeah. I'm the general manager, marketing guru, travel coordinator. I do all of that stuff.
Well, and I think it's essential, the way our sport's kind of evolving now, to have someone like that.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have a guy, you know, have that person within an organization that is business driven. Because as we know, whatever brings in the dollars into what brings the dollars into the door is going to allow the speed to go out.
Yeah, and that's it. And we have looked at that still with a very critical eye of where do we spend our money most effectively. But the biggest thing that changed for us was just what we were going to spend on personnel.
People.
We just looked at that and went, man, with all the failures that we had, with falling down in the points, with falling out of the top 30 in the points, with tires and trying to save money on tires and all that, the thing is, we probably wind up spending the money anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so, and I think, too, like, right off the bat, you know, you can say, yeah, well, we only spent money on personnel. Well, I think that's the biggest expenditure on any race
team.
It is. You know, so it's like you guys still spent the money where it was mostly applicable, you know? Like,
and I feel like it most affects a race car. So,
correct.
Like, I think if I took my group right now, if I said, sorry, guys, I made a trade with Mike Harmon. We're getting his cars, and he's getting all of our cars. Sorry, he threw in some money, but this is the trade. It is what it is.
It's like a baseball trade.
Right, it's a baseball trade. We're trading all of our cars and engines. We're getting back all of his cars and his engines.
He's going to pay for our vending machines.
Right, yeah. He's going to throw in a few Sprites for the soda machine. I still feel confident, and this is no discredit to Mike and them, I feel confident that my guys could take his cars and put something out on track that would be more competitive than they are right now.
Yeah.
And that's because Mike looks at it like, I'm doing a lot of this work myself. I'm going to spend money at the track with personnel. But really, back in the shop, I'm going to try to save some money on the overhead. Yeah. Well, that leads to them running the same car a whole lot. Bailey and Kyle have got to go over there and do some of the work on their own cars. And the biggest thing that's hurting them isn't speed. It's reliability.
Yeah.
Right? So I feel like if I traded my cars for theirs, the thing that I would still have going for me is great people working on it, and they'd still pretty much be reliable. Now, I'm going to knock on some wood here, right, not curse my guys, because we've done a pretty good job of that this year.
Yeah.
And we just said early on, if we spend money in that side of things, we're going to hopefully not beat ourselves on the racetrack. There might be days where you suck.
Yeah.
Like, we showed up to Pocono, we sucked.
Yep.
Like, we can just say it. We go, man, car wasn't very good. We were tight.
I think the
– and we sucked. But
yeah. I think the tough part...
We still finished 20th.
Exactly.
Where you go,
yeah.
All right, well, some guys dropped out of the race, some guys wrecked, some whatever, and we still wind up finishing 20th, and you go, well, if a bad day for us is 20th, we're going to be doing pretty good in the standings.
Yeah. I think the hard part, too, getting over, the level of competition from last year to this year is, like, this year, if you're off, you know, you're gonna run 27th, 28th.
Yeah.
You know, last year I felt, even from my situation, if I was off, you know, we might finish 23rd.
Right.
Maybe a 24th. You know, if we had tires and we were off, we'd finish 22nd, worse. And so it's such a different level of intensity.
There's probably 30 teams out there right now every week that are buying the full complement of tires.
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
That's what you're up against.
I mean, I know, like, looking at our data, it's like, it's in race trim, under green, 25 laps into a race, a tenth and a half is 28th to 18th.
Right.
And it's every weekend, and it's incredible the level of kind of a rise that every team has gotten to now.
And it also speaks to the Xfinity Series here, and let us gush on this for a minute. The package in the Xfinity Series has stayed the same.
Badass.
And it's a great race car.
Yeah.
And we go to tracks, and they give us enough horsepower that tire wear comes into a factor in a lot of these places. And so, you know, when you go to a Darlington, you know what? If I got a pretty good handling car, if we buy these tires, like, I'm going to have a shot, right? Yeah. They might have a little more power than me. They might have a little more car than me. But if I can manage this and we can set our car up pretty good, I got a shot at it.
I got a shot.
So that's not happening in trucks.
No.
It's not happening in Cup.
No. Nope.
It's happening in the Xfinity Series, and that's what's led to the rise of the depth of this field. There's so many skilled guys, Jesse, when it comes to crew chief and setting these cars up. And the setups have stayed relatively
similar
for now the last several years. So that knowledge is freely flowing through the garage area. Like, I guarantee you, if I went over there and talked to Dave Ingram, if I went and talked to Keith Wolf over there at BJ and said, okay, what are you guys running here?
They'd pull out Tommy Joe 2017 Michigan.
Yeah, and they go, man, we really ran really good with this. Let's go back with this, you know, and we're probably doing something really similar over there on our car. It's just, we're all in a box that's so close. It comes down to, obviously, the equipment, right? The motor that's sitting underneath the hood and the reliability of the car. And obviously, we're going to have varying degrees of, did you hit it? Did you miss it?
Yeah.
And really, the people you got working on this thing every week.
Yeah, and I think a visual example of that was last year when we went back racing without practice, right?
Right.
Like, all of a sudden, I was like, damn, you know, my crew chief last year, Brian Berry, I was like, damn, Brian, if we hit it right, you know, we're no longer 3/10 away from 10th. We're like, maybe a 10th.
Yeah.
Like, position.
Think about Richmond. This is a fun story, right? Exactly. So the Gibbs cars and how bad they struggled that first Richmond race.
Yep.
And I don't know how you guys ran. We wound up making a pass for 15th there at the very end of the race. I know Matt Mills.
That was your first pole the next day.
Yeah, I had a pole the next day because we inverted the field, which I'm still counting that, by the way.
100%.
That's still going to hang up a banner
over
there. That's
the history books.
Yeah, that's it. You know what? My name's still written down there. They don't ask how.
They don't ask how.
Nobody's going to ask how in 20 years. But yeah, like, Matt Mills had a great run. Finished like 13th.
Yeah.
And then backed it up the next day. So that came from, we're showing up to a track, cold turkey. It's a super sensitive track.
Yeah, very finicky.
Like, oh my God. I mean, we ran 15th the first day, and then the next day we sucked. I mean, we ran like 23rd, 25th. Couldn't get to turn in a field.
Same racetrack.
Like, same racetrack, same car the next day. So that level of kind of balance to this and the unpredictability of it, it speaks to your point that the diversity throughout the course of the field, all the way through the depth of the field. I mean, Mike Harmon's cars, like, I keep bringing them up. They're not showing up thinking, all right, guys, we're running for 30th today.
Correct.
They're sitting there going, all right, we're buying the tires. Why can't we go run 17th?
Yep. I think that's the mindset of literally every single – I think like you said, that is a mindset of the cars from 20th to 33rd. You know, that's
– right.
For us, it's, hey, if we hit this right, if our attitude's right, and if we get lucky with some tire situations, have a sponsor, whatever – you know, we could go run 20th all day and knock out a top 20.
Yeah.
We could miss it and everyone else doesn't, and we're 29th, you know, green flag average.
Right.
And, you know, and it's just a matter of sticking with it.
Uh-huh. And where I think with my team compared to y'all's, I just think I have probably a little bit of margin for error, right?
Yeah.
You guys are picking your spots a lot more.
Yep.
You guys are having your sponsorship laid out and you go, okay, this is the race. I feel really comfortable here. We're going to go for it here.
Yeah.
But then we're going to go to this other track, and we're going to try to save a little bit.
We're going
to
be smart. Yeah.
We're just going to save our money. We're going to not spend the money on the tires. We're going to share a pit crew here. We're going to pick our spots here. That makes sense. Whereas us, we're showing up every week going, all right, we're trying to run 15th every week, right? And that's the difference.
Yep. Yeah, I want to change the subject a little bit. I got to talk with Stefan about this last episode, and I think it'd be fun with you. How do you think your school has benefited you in racing, your college degree? I think, like, Stefan and I were trying to figure out, man, there's only about 4 or 5 of us, I believe, that did it and are able to hang it on our wall. What are your kind of looking back? What are you glad you did it for?
Yeah, I think I'm glad I finished it, right?
Yeah.
Because there was definitely a path where I wouldn't have finished my degree. I stepped away to race and then came back to finish and then went back to racing. So there's definitely a version of this where I just don't wind up doing
racing
it at all.
Don't wind up finishing
that degree,
school.
Right? I was still probably about a year and a half short. So for me, I think the biggest thing I'm proud of is that I went back and did it. I think a lot of that's due to my mom really pushing me to do that. And And it's something that...
Were you right out of high school when you went?
Yeah, I was. Yeah. And then took time in the middle of it away to go race, and then came back, and then went to race again, and then came back again. So, like, I bounced around quite a bit.
What was the time frame there?
It's like probably about 7 years over the course of it. Yeah. Okay. I think I graduated when I was 24, 25.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, you're looking at 20. Oh, God. How old am I? So, it was 2011 when I graduated. Yeah. So, I think the biggest thing for me that it helped with is understanding from the media's perspective, because I studied journalism.
Yeah.
What makes a good story? And so we're sitting here talking on a podcast, right, about our careers and kind of a different view on the field. But it made me understand, where do I think the stories lie in what I'm doing, right? Because there's nothing, no offense to all of us. Is there anything inherently interesting about a guy finishing 25th? Not really. That's not that interesting. There's not much interesting about a guy finishing 15th.
Yeah.
There's not that much interesting about a guy finishing 7th.
Correct.
So how are you framing this into a story that is worth telling?
Yeah, and consumable. People right. like to hear it.
Right. So it's not this conspiracy by the media to never talk about small teams. It's not that. It's just that, you know, you got to have a little bit of a story.
It's a different,
of course,
yeah.
the teams that are running up front all the time, they're going to be more likely to tell generic stories about them because they're often a factor in the overall story of the race, right?
Correct.
But, like, I think about a time when I was driving for BJ's team. Bristol, 2018, I think it was. We go out, practice. BJ wrecks a car in practice. Something broke. Well, they wind up having to drive to Mooresville at night, pick up a car, work on it at the shop, drive it back in the morning to qualify and put this thing on the racetrack with no practice under the car at all, nothing. Basically, go drive to Mooresville, get the backup car, put it together, drive back to the track.
And qualify at Bristol.
That was the first lap on track. And by the way, he out-qualified me by like a tenth. By like a tenth. Because of course he did, because he's BJ, right?
BJ.
So he's just ridiculous. But I felt like, man, nobody on the team was bringing this up.
Yeah.
Because obviously they had their hands full. But for me, I was staying in Bristol and I reached out to Jamie Little. And I reached out to the NBC people, Dave Burns, and I said, "Man, I think I got a really good story for you guys." And sure enough, that was the first thing they talked about on the broadcast. And they went over and interviewed BJ. And BJ even said to me afterwards, "That was probably the most TV time his team had ever gotten leading up to that." So what was the difference there?
The story.
The difference was just how I framed the story,
yeah.
right? So that was the thing. Is that kind of stuff happens?
Yeah.
Like we hear about it.
Yeah.
It's just how do you frame that to a journalist, to somebody that's in the industry and go, "Hey man, look, I really got something for you."
Yeah.
When I go up to Parker Kligerman, the thing is, I can't just go, "Hey, we got a new sponsor on the car this week." That
everybody does.
Everybody does, right? But if I can frame it like, "Hey, by the way, I got a new sponsor on the car this week, and also they did this huge wow. benefit for this other thing," or whatever, and it ties into the story somehow, well, now all of a sudden you can frame it to where
you
it makes
substance.
A little more sense. Yeah. And it makes sense for them to tell it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Like, you know, I find it interesting when I see a lot of, you know, social media posts or rhetoric where it's, you know, NASCAR's changed and it's not like the good old days. And I'm, you know, I think Stefan and I even talked about it. I'm like, man, we're driving home from Mid-Ohio on a Saturday at 9 o'clock at night, you know, that we just raced at and what do you mean this isn't like the good old days?
Yeah, it's exactly like the good old days.
You know, it's like, I remember stories of my dad driving, you know, to Pocono in Michigan back in the mid-90s in the Busch Series, and I'm like, we're still doing it.
Yeah, and,
it's
and
just the story.
I would pick, and this is where I am going to pick on the media, right? I think that we have now spent a lot of time talking about the front of the field, and we always talked about the front of the field a lot. It's just that that gap between the front and the back has now just grown to an exponential amount, right?
Yeah, it's tough.
I mean, we've joked before about basically running in a sports car race, right?
Yeah.
And you have like the GT class, which is what we're in, and then you have the prototypes over the front. And when you spend all the time focusing on the prototypes and the prototype drivers, well, you know what? Their day-to-day is very different than mine and your day-to-day, right? And so, and I'm not ripping anybody.
No,
believe me, I would love to fly in there on a private jet and land and have a go-kart or a golf cart waiting for me and pick me up and run me into my RV and all this. But if that is the image that we're giving off, right? And I'm also attributing this to the Cup Series as well, yeah. right?
Is that what we want to give off?
Is that necessarily connecting us to a blue-collar fan base? Yeah. And I think it's not, right? Yeah. And I've written about this in podcasts and
blogs
and stuff. Like, I've talked about this a lot. It's not that these guys are doing anything wrong. They're living their lives. They're successful. They're winning. They're on great teams. Good for them. That's wonderful. I just think more of as a philosophy of yeah. how we're covering this,
yeah.
do we need to balance that out by also telling stories of teams like Carl yeah. Long
like us.
And stories yeah. of teams like BJ McLeod Motorsports? Yeah. Do we need to balance that out? Because I think that probably frames the whole thing better for the fan base.
100%. And I mean, I'm kind of living proof of that. I was like, you know what? You're right. I feel like there is a lot of good content for everyone like us. And I was like, screw it. I'll freaking talk about it myself.
Right.
I'll get my buddies together and talk about it.
That was me writing the blogs. Yeah, yeah. And in 2016 when I did all that, and it's still out there.
Because I think even then, yeah. people loved it. They want to know about that.
Look, I'm not acting like I'm some pioneer here, okay? Like, people have been on small teams before, and you look back through, like, you ever see a team that big, like NASCAR Almanac, where yeah. it's like NASCAR through the years or whatever? People like J.D. McDuffie Dude. Were complaining about the same shit that you and I are complaining about in like 1979.
Yeah.
Okay? So really, the fights about, they got more money and all that, it really hasn't changed. It feels like it's only happening to us.
But because we're living it right now.
Because we're living
yeah.
it. But it's happened for a long time. So I get why NASCAR takes the philosophy that they take.
Yeah.
But I felt like, for me, in the moment in 2016, and this is what this really talks about, I feel like as somebody that was an outsider coming in here, mm-hmm. right? So you said growing up here, obviously your dad, huge, awesome career. And and you kind of knew what to expect.
I was born into it,
right?
Man.
You just kind of already knew. You knew the ins and outs a little bit before you got into it, right? I'm talking about this from the labor standpoint, that you had to raise to do it. Like, you knew it transparent before you even got going.
You know, the guys I was able to go late model racing with were Xfinity winning championship right. mechanics and crew chiefs. You
right.
know, like, they, just like that.
And your dad earned that, and you earned it by showing up and learning and putting in the time, putting in the work. That's fine.
Yeah.
For me, it wasn't even necessarily about like, oh man, these other people like you have this huge advantage on me. It was more that, like, I felt like I was being just completely left out.
Yeah.
We were out here doing this on our own. We were out here driving up and down the road in a dually and risking my family. Literally, my family put up their house as collateral on some of the loans that we took out on the racing stuff. And I was like, okay, we are really risking it on my career in racing, and we're really putting ourselves out there. And we felt like we had given so much to it. And I was looking around going, reporters are like mispronouncing my name, and nobody's talking to me about any of the things that we're doing. And it feels like I'm just screaming into the void here.
Yeah.
And like, I'm completely irrelevant. And that was the most depressing part of it to me, dude. And so when I wrote those blogs, I felt like I was at a time in my career in 2016 where we were struggling so bad. And I feel like, man, today, I just was running in the top 10 in Michigan. Could I, myself, the driver in 2016, have done what I did, you know, a couple days ago? Honestly, from a driving talent standpoint, yeah, probably. Now, I have more experience now, but really, it was about the situation.
Yeah.
And nobody knew the situation, and I felt like I had to tell everybody what was going on with me, because
correct.
I was like, man,
And it's almost like you...
Is this all worthless? Like,
yeah,
if nobody even knew we did it?
And it's almost like you feel like a sense of urgency to tell it, just so the foundation is laid. So people know, oh, okay, you know, Tommy Joe's running 22nd. Why is that a great day for him, you know,
right.
in 2016?
And it was therapeutic. It was therapeutic for me, because I was like, okay, nobody even knows we exist out here.
Yeah.
And then after I wrote the first couple of blogs, I had people like Kyle Petty and Mike Joy and Mark Martin and all these people like reaching out to me going, you know, this is really interesting. This is really good. Now, eventually, people were like, this is too much. And now you're just crying poor all the time. And now you're, you know, all you're doing is complaining. And you're talking about how things suck for you and how you're never going to get the breaks and all that. Well, the thing is, that's how I felt at the time. And it was my blog.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
All right. So you're reading it, but I felt to the point that I eventually stopped writing it. And why is that? And like, I think back a lot about that, man, because I really felt like I was really bearing my soul on a lot of this stuff. and I know that I was telling the truth. It's just that out here, when we're racing at the highest levels, I think there's an expectation as a driver. And I can say this when I was going into it. I was like, all right, I am a full-time driver in the truck series. It doesn't matter that I'm on my own family team.
Yeah.
Somebody is going to notice what I'm doing out here. And that's just not true. And as that became apparent to me, it was really depressing because I was like, wow, we've done all of this and I might still never get a quote-unquote shot,
yeah.
Right? Like, we're doing all this and maybe nobody even notices. So now I'm going to write this. And everybody's like, wow, what a great story. But man, he's really complaining a lot. And you're like, okay, well, how can I tell this in a way that doesn't come across like I'm bitter? Because at times, dude, you are bitter.
Oh, my God.
You're really bitter, and you're really jealous.
Yeah, and you don't want to say it, but you are.
But you are. Yeah. Like, of course, look, I'll talk about it right now. Like, Riley Herbst, I've talked to Riley a few times. I don't have anything against Riley. Do I wish I was in the 98 car?
Yeah.
Hell, yes, I do. Yeah. Now, is that going to make me dislike Riley? Well, no, not as a person, but definitely as a competitor, because I'm like, man, I wish I could just give me one chance in that, right? But that's just not how it works. And so, of course, that builds into frustration, and that frustration comes out in emotions when you run this stuff, and you're so close to it every week, and especially 5 minutes after you get out of a race car, what the hell do you think you're going to say? You're going to say whatever's on your mind.
Whatever's on your mind. You know, it's funny you say that, because I lived with my good buddy, my best friend, Cole Custer, for about a year and a half, almost 2 years, and it brought up a lot of interesting dinner discussions with him
sure.
and I. You know, he'd come home late on a Sunday, I'd see him Monday, and he'd be all mopey finishing 16th.
Mad about finishing fourth or something.
We finished eighth, you know. We're just, our arrow's off. And I'm like, I got to go outside.
You ever have, like, the hey, man, shut the hell up.
You know, in a roundabout way, we had a lot of, you know, good discussions. And honestly, Cole taught me one thing that I think is super important. And that is, you know, in our sport, and I think as athletes in general, you put so much pressure on yourself, but he has the same problems we do. The difference is, you know, his problems, I like to say they have a different zero at the end of them.
Absolutely.
You know, and once I kind of started thinking about it like that, it was like, you know what? It is easy for me to get bitter or jealous, but it's like, well, why? Like, that's not doing anything to help.
Well,
you know,
here's the frustrating part, right? So, like, I had a guy, and this is probably – probably a few months ago, right? And even on the broadcast this weekend, I had people calling me and telling me, oh my gosh, man, it was so cool. Dale Jr. was talking about you on the broadcast. You guys were having such a great run. Well, I listened to it. And the thing that Dale Jr. said was, here's Martin's only one top 10 at 100 something starts. And it's like, okay. Well, when you put it that way, it sounds like I just suck. But the thing is, here's what we're talking about in that situation, right? A top 10 for us is basically
a win. Yeah.
It's basically a win.
Oh, I can't. Oh.
So the part of this that sucks is for a guy like Cole, and I know Cole too.
Yeah.
First of all, Cole is a badass driver.
Yeah.
Like, he
awesome.
Really, really is elite.
Yeah.
Now, when he's running the Xfinity Series, we've already said it earlier, 14 cars.
Yeah.
So a top 10 to them is kind of a given. You only really beat four cars. So that's kind of a weird way of framing this. When you go, oh, well, had a great year. He had 22 top 10s. All right, well, so what, he beat four cars 22 times? Like, in our part of the field, like, I feel like every single week, yeah, we're running better than y'all. And, yeah, our goals are a little bit different than y'all, Jesse. But at the same time, I don't feel like it's a given that I beat you every week.
Correct.
Like,
yeah.
You look at me and you go, hey, you know what? We hit it. We can beat the 44 car.
Yeah. And you know, and it's vice versa. And it's like the weeks that we do, it's like, good job, guys.
Hey, great job.
Pat on the back. And then the weeks we're close.
But that depth of the field, depth of the field that we're talking about, basically
five spots.
15 cars, right?
Yeah.
So that's the same. It's the same as the front 14.
It's all relative.
But now it's our 15 or 20 cars.
Yeah.
And where do you finish relative to your group? And it's like, well, there are some times where 21st is actually way up towards the front of that group.
Yeah.
But there's other times where 12th is the front of that group.
Yeah.
It's just the group moves around.
It's the group moves around and where you are in relative to it.
Yeah.
The front end, the back end, right in the middle, okay, then your goals and expectations adjust accordingly.
Perfect example. We had Ty Gibbs lined up behind us on a restart. I lined up second. there in Michigan this past weekend. And I was on the inside line. I had Brandon Brown behind me for one of them, and I was like, Brandon's going to push me. And he did. He gave me a good push into turn one. I was able to kind of hang with the 10 car, and then they wrecked everything behind us. But regardless, the next thing, well, here comes Ty Gibbs lined up behind me. Now, Ty Gibbs, when he looks at the 44 car, he goes, I'm not racing this guy.
Yeah.
I need to get around this guy. That's, by the way, probably how I would look at it if I was sitting in the 44 car or in the 54 car.
Yeah.
I would look at it the same way. So I'm not saying anything bad about Ty Gibbs here, but that's proof that they don't look at cars like ours like, okay, I got to race this guy. I need to give him a push. Maybe I can clear the top lane. No, they just go, all right, this guy's in the way. I got to get around him real quick. So they're not really racing us in their mind. In fact, when we race them really hard, they're pretty annoyed because they're like, dude, I'm not even racing you. Leave me alone.
Leave me alone.
And that's what turns into,
you know, you shouldn't beat me. Leave me alone.
Right. Why are you side draft me? Why are you pulling me back? Why are you chopping me off? And that's what leads to some of these accidents that we see. It's a difference in mindset from the group of cars that you're racing. And you're right in the sense that there's a different zero behind the group of cars that they're racing. Yeah, money-wise, sure, there definitely is. But also just their position on the grid. They're looking at that like, we ought to be in the top five.
Yeah.
So when I'm not, I'm disappointed.
I'm mad.
I look at it like, I ought to be in the top 20. And when I'm not, I'm mad about it. We're having the same emotions. We're driving the same race cars. It's just a different goal when we go out there.
So after the last year and a half, coming up on 2 years, where is your vision? Where's your five-year plan for Martins Motorsports?
Well, I think we're now going to ask philosophical questions about the future of the Xfinity Series, right?
Put you on the spot. I'm actually more curious than what you would think because I do want to hear your answer.
Well, yeah, because I'm also an owner. You're talking to an owner over here. Look, I think the Xfinity Series is in a great spot right now. I really do. I think that's why you're seeing so many teams created is because it is a really good spot.
Yeah, wanting to come in.
The money pays good. It's not great. Could be a little better, but it pays good. Certainly a lot better than the Truck Series. And so now you're seeing teams like mine, teams like BJ, smaller teams, looking at this like, this is the place we need to be.
Yeah.
Cup expenses, probably too much. Truck expenses, you're saving some money some places, but the payout just isn't there.
Yeah. You're still spinning too close to Xfinity to race 10 less races.
Exactly.
And get paid less.
And the thing is, you still got to pay people to work in a shop. The dynamics there from a business standpoint just really aren't there in the Truck Series. Now, there's probably some stuff they can do, eliminating pit stops, moving some things around. We don't need to go down that road. Let's stay in the Xfinity road, right?
Yeah.
Do I think this changes over the course of the next few years? Yeah. Like, are pit stops still a thing? If Cups go into a single lug, like, are we going to keep having pit crew guys asking to do both? I don't know. Maybe some of those Cup teams don't look at that and go, we really don't want our Cup crews pitting Xfinity cars because it's different.
It's going to mess them up.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we look at a schedule shift where now we go to some different venues? Maybe we don't want to go race at like a Chicago street race or something like Cup is talking about doing, and we go somewhere else for a standalone event. Are there more of those? How does that look? You know, are there more events? Like, I've heard Cup is extending their schedule.
Yeah. Do we go back to doubleheaders?
Do we go back to doubleheaders? Does Xfinity consolidate our schedule? So there's a lot of things that can move around, but I do think that the package overall with our race car, I hope that stays relatively the same.
It's good.
I think every fan in the seat, in the stands and all the drivers here sitting here that I've talked to and crew chiefs feel like it is a good, fair package that when they get it right, you run good, and when you miss, you run bad. It's not too expensive to work on. The parts now are going to be super readily available now the Cup's going to a new car. So that's going to create an even better advantage for teams like ours, right?
Yeah. Close the gap.
Yeah, hopefully. Some of that stuff trickles down, right? So I think it could be a really healthy place here in a few years. And my role, I think, Jesse, is going to change a lot because I'm not seeing myself just purely as a driver anymore, right? I've already announced it a few weeks ago that I'm going to wind up going part-time next year.
How long did that kind of take you to make that decision, or was it just over time?
It's such a tough thing.
There wasn't an aha moment, was there? Or was it just, you know, one morning you did wake up and you were like, you know what, let's do something different.
I think this really talks more about, are you satisfied with where you're at?
Yeah. Well, right? We could have a whole nother episode on that.
But if I asked you right now, Jesse Little, are you satisfied with your career? If it all ended right now, did you do everything you wanted to do? You would probably say no. I'm just going to speak for you here. You would probably say no. Now, you've got to do some cool shit. You got to run cup.
Yeah.
You know, you've been contending for wins in truck races and stuff. Like, you've got to do some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
But you probably still don't feel like you've accomplished all your goals, right? For me, I'll tell you what my goals were getting into racing.
This is 20...
No, this is way, this is way in long. The day. Okay. This is 2000... whatever. 2003. So my dad and I go to Bondurant. It's 2003. I'm 16 years old. We don't know anything. We don't know literally anything. Never been around racing, ever. I go to Bondurant. I don't even know how to drive a stick. And we're basically asking these people, like, does he have any future in this at all? Does he have any talent at all? And the guy goes, actually, yeah. You know, he's picking this up pretty quick. You need to get him in a go-kart. So we do. We have a lot of success at the local level, and we go run some big WKA nationals. Still, we don't know shit. I'm the one that's in charge of, like, soaking our own tires and, like, finding out air pressures, which, let me tell you, I don't need to be in charge of anything. So we're doing all this, and we're going, yeah, you know what? I got a little bit of a knack for this. But when I was at Bondurant, when I was there the first time, 16 years old, one of the guys at the front of the class that was an instructor, he said, okay, it was like the super high performance part of this. He goes, all right, we got a lot of people, different backgrounds in here. What are your goals in racing? Like, some of you are wanting to drive just track days. Some of you guys are actually wanting to get into racing. What are your goals? And it got to me, and I said, man, you know, if I could just run the ARCA race at Daytona one time, like, that would be really cool.
That'd be really cool.
And I did that in 2009 with, like, my own team, and we finished eighth. It was right behind Danica Patrick, all right? We did it again the next year. And it's like the goalposts for me have continuously changed ever since, right? Where it's like, oh, man, I want to finish in the top 20 in the standings. And it's like, all right, I want to try to make the playoffs. And it's like, all right, I want to try. And I look back at it now at 34, and I'm going, all right, what is realistic for me? Okay, like, Rick Hendrick's not picking up the phone and calling me, right? Now, if you went out and just kicked ass next year, I'm talking about Jesse the driver, and you just kicked ass, dominated, made the playoffs, were just crushing it on a great team. Let's say you got that opportunity. Man, those doors could be open for you. Like, you're still young enough that's still a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just being realistic. It's probably not a possibility for me.
Mm-hmm.
So my version of a driving career now would be something like BJ, where I'm driving for a smaller team in the Cup Series, trying to take care of the equipment, bring them home solid finishes.
Yeah.
Not saying that I
couldn't. Something that's you're in control of.
Like Jeremy in our series, right?
Yeah.
Contender for the playoffs every year. I could maybe keep doing that.
Yeah.
But really, I think this was more for me about, like, justifying everything that my family had gone through, excuse me, to try to get us to this point.
Kind of the longevity side of it.
We tried so hard for so long, man, to try to put together just a competitive team. We did it in 2014. We sucked. We went out of business. We did it in 2016. We sucked. We hung around in 2017, even when we shouldn't have in the Truck Series, and we sucked again. But then we actually started kind of figuring it out, and then we went out of business. We came back. For me, as a driving career, and, like, we drove for BJ McLeod, learned so much. Learned so much from Carl Long when I was over there with them. And I figured out kind of an idea of a game plan of how to do this. Went back, sucked again in ownership, and struggled and struggled and struggled. And finally, at the end of last year, it felt like it was kind of turning the corner for us.
Yeah.
And then this year again, starting off, feeling like we're getting some momentum here. I think there's just a sense of satisfaction that I have, dude, in all this. That's why
almost
I'm saying,
like, a content.
Yeah, because it's like, you know what? I've said to people for years that I felt like I could do this. Like, I could manage a team. I could put a team together. I could get the sponsors. I could do my side of this business successfully and drive a car successfully.
Yeah.
Now, have I beaten everybody? Have I beaten Sieg? Have I beaten Clements? Have I beaten Brandon Brown? No, I haven't. But I feel like we're competing with them each and every week. Like, we're at least in the mix. And I feel like there's a level of satisfaction that I have with that I can at least step back. Like, I'm not stepping away completely.
Yeah, stepping back.
But I'm stepping back and going, you know what? There's a lot of people that didn't think I could do it. Yeah. There's a lot of people that made fun of us. There's a lot of people that said that I wasn't going to be successful in this as an outsider coming in, trying to do my own thing. Team owners saying, no, you just need to pay us the money.
Yeah.
And we went down our own path with it. And I can now look at all those guys and say, you know what? I told you so. And I'm not ripping into anybody here, but, like, hey, BJ McLeod, I told you we could do it. Hey, Johnny Davis. Yeah. I told you we could do, like,
yeah, I showed you.
I showed you we can do this, and I didn't have to do it with y'all. And that's a satisfying feeling, right? Absolutely. That's not me sticking it in their face, but you definitely just feel like, okay, I'm proud of what we've created here. I feel like I have created a top 20 type Xfinity program at the second highest level of motorsports in America.
Yeah, yeah, and arguably one of the most competitive years in the last decade and a half.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm doing that both on the management side and also executing it on a driver level where I'm up there competitive every week. And I feel like for me, now, with all the risk that we've had and all this, monetarily and the impact that it would have on my family, I want to mitigate that. I want to step back. I want to bring in some other people that have done the same things that I've done, right? Trying to raise the funding, trying to get themselves in a competitive car, and can we be an alternative? Okay, man, I can't go to the front of the field. I can't afford that. My sponsors can't afford that. But I still want to be in a competitive car. I still want to have a chance. All right, well, we can be that for someone.
Yeah.
And I think there's something really cool to me, and this is going to just be mushy, but there's something really cool to me about, like, when I was first getting into this, just a quick story, I sat down with Eddie Sharp, who I'm sure you know, and it was in ARCA. We were talking about running ARCA in, like, 2010, and he said, man, look, you got a lot of talent, but, you know, eventually this kind of comes down to money. I mean, that's what it's going to come down to. And he's like, man, I'd love to put you in a good car, but, you know, we got to have the money up front. We got to do all this. And, like, that's like the bubble bursting for a lot of people, right? Yeah. And for me, it definitely was. It was the air being let out of the balloon. And I felt like there were a lot of people that lied to me and my dad in the early on of this about what the cost would be, what's realistic.
What's realistic.
Expectations. And people lied. And we got screwed out of a whole hell of a lot of money. And I think back on that, and I'm like, man, if we had all the money that we spent in racing, and I had it to all do over again, knowing what I know now, like, holy crap, like, I basically would be colic right now. Like, I would be like, we would be a championship contender at this point.
With a cup charter.
Yeah, with two cup charters, right? So I'm laughing about that, and I go, I might have that opportunity, and I already have, and we're going to have a big announcement coming in the next week. I know this podcast really isn't timely.
Yeah.
Probably by the time this is out, that announcement will have already happened. But we've got an announcement coming where we're announcing a younger driver on the team that I got to have, in a really weird twist here, the same conversation that my dad and I had with another manager on a team. And I told him flat out, like,
deja vu.
It was really weird for me to be sitting there at the table with him. And I said, look, I can promise you right now, I am never going to lie to you. And I'm never going to tell you what we can't do. I'm never going to tell you something we cannot do. I'm going to be really realistic, because it's unrealistic to expect that you're going to get in this car at 20 years old and do way more than I'm doing in it right now at 34 with 7 years of experience driving these things, right?
Yeah,
100 plus Xfinity starts, right? Yep. That's just unrealistic. So this is what the goals would be. Now, you can spend more money. You can go to another team. And those goals might be a little bit different. But is that necessarily the best fit for you? And so I felt like I was able to have a real, honest, open conversation with a younger driver at the beginning of their career, with all of their goals still ahead of them.
Yeah.
That same moment that I wish for so bad, Jesse, is like, could I do it all over again?
And how
could I do it
changed?
Smarter? Well, I was able to kind of give that advice to somebody.
That's pretty cool.
And hopefully the start of their career in the Xfinity Series next year with our team is going to be putting them down a path that they want, they can still achieve all their goals.
Yeah. Setting them up.
Right.
Yeah. Well, look, man, I think that's a great ending. I want to thank you for giving me the last hour.
Yeah,
I know,
man.
It wasn't ideal conditions. We're out here sweating in the sun.
Oh, we're sweating our ass off out here. But
getting
actually,
we're getting ready for Daytona.
It's actually pretty nice. Yeah, we're getting ready for Daytona. No, it's been a lot of fun. It's neat to look back on this now. Like, my career as a driver, I don't see it as over.
Yeah.
It's not over. I'm kinda still going to have
changed.
It's just changing, right? And now I get to be a leader, not just in the cockpit of the car, but more so focusing on the rest of my life in racing and what are going to be the next steps for me.
Yeah. And I think what's cool to kind of put the period on that, on this, is like yourself, you know, Denny Hamlin, Brad Keselowski.
Right.
Like, there's a reason racers and drivers turn into the ownership side of it and kind of make that their next, Jeff Gordon, I guess, even,
right,
you know, they make that their next pursuit. Cause it's, we're never going to leave this shit.
No,
we're never going to leave this.
Never. Can't do it.
And so it's like, okay, I might be too old, but you know, what else can I do?
The knowledge, yeah, right? The knowledge that you can then pass down to somebody else, right? And there is a value in that, okay? Like, I'm quick to say everything should be cheaper than it is, but there is a value to having gone through all this and the made experience. The mistakes and suffered through the consequences of it and driven bad cars and felt like I was being wasted, right? It's like, man, nobody cares about this. So to be able to put somebody in a position where they can still achieve all the stuff that they want to achieve, put them on a good foundation, point them down the right path, hopefully steer them away from some of the potholes and some of this stuff, that's rewarding. I didn't think it would be as rewarding as it actually turned out being.
As it's turning out to be.
Yeah, and I was skeptical about it, but I'm feeling more content with it. And I feel like eventually when I step all the way out of the race car, I think I'm going to be at a place where I know that's the right decision, right? I'm not there yet. I'm still having a lot of fun.
We're almost there.
I still want to go to Darlington.
We're coming up on like 10 to go maybe.
Right. Yeah. We're coming down the home stretch here. We might get a couple green white checkers there at the end of the race.
Maybe triple overtime.
Yeah, it might be a triple overtime, but I'm definitely, I see the end for myself. Now, I'm sure there's some race car drivers that would say, well, if you even think that, you ought to get out. Well, no.
It's 2021.
Look, man, this is also a financial decision, right? Yeah. It's about somebody else coming in here that can help raise the money for this race team, not just me, not just my dad, right? So it's a financial decision that we're making that affects, obviously, a personal feeling that I have of, like, kind of retiring, even though I'm not, but it feels like I kind of am. But even then, I feel content.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best way to feel about it. Like, I was worried about this moment. And I really didn't have anything to worry about.
Well, man, I wish you the best of luck, and I appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun hanging out with you.
Go, you guys go in on a high note, and looking forward to next
year,
man.
I'm just going
to
follow y'all here at Daytona coming up this weekend. You guys were like 11th through 13th at Daytona in the spring,
right?
That's
the BJ McLeod strategy.
Oh, my God. I just need to lock onto the back of y'all's bumper and try to pass you on one to go.
People are like, you know, why don't we do that more? And I'm like, I don't know.
I don't want to tell you. We do it every time, and it works pretty good.
Yeah, it works for me. Just listen to that guy. Listen to the guy in flip-flops on pit road.
Right. Look, man, it'll be fun racing with you the rest of this year, and best of luck. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, man. Lucky Podcast, Season 1. Thank you.